Because we're going to talk about some heavy things, some weighty things. Things that I had wished someone had said to me at this stage of life. And I just want to get you connected with this. I've called this message The Third Nine, and my inspiration for that title comes from Psalm 90. Now, we're going to look at a bunch of passages, but I'm going to have them all on the screen, so you don't need to turn there as long as you can read the screen. And this Psalm 90, I've got the date here because this is 1425 BC, and I know a lot of you think, well, David wrote the Psalms, but the oldest psalm that we have is a psalm of Moses, and this is it, Psalm 90. And you remember, as he's wandering in the wilderness, a lot of people are dying. And he writes this song. Here's one part of it. He says this: "The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength 80, yet their span is but toil and trouble. They're soon gone, and we fly away." This was a long, long time ago. He said, you know, you can't really be hopeful of living past 80. Now, occasionally people do it, but it's not the norm. As a matter of fact, if you were born anywhere around 1990, and I know a lot of you were, how many were born before 1990? See, not many. How many were born after 1990? 1990 or after, there you go. Here's what you have to look forward to, exactly what Moses said. You have as a life expectancy 75 years and 2 months. So that third month, if you make it to 75 and you're in January, February, March, you've beat the national average. Now, that's assuming that you don't die of some premature death with cancer or a car accident, or you do something crazy and you get killed, or God takes your life some other way. But if you have a normal life, born in the United States of America, and you were born in or around 1990, you've got about 75 years that you can expect, not presumptuously, but you can expect that that's probably about the span of your life. So Moses, even back then, and I know it's ebbed and flowed with health and disease and all of that, but we're right now in the center of right where the Bible had said in that song for Moses that you and I can expect to live. Well, two verses later, Moses says this in verse number 12 of that song, after all of that discussion about the brevity of life, that it goes by fast, he says, "So teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom." And he's saying, you've got to know that we're not here forever. And that's the problem when we're young. We think, man, everything is in front of us. And now I know you've heard this endlessly from your folks and from older people like me who've said, man, it goes by fast. And you think, well, it's not going by that fast. But you know what? It does go by fast. And sure enough, you'll learn to discover that, as Moses said, before you know it, you start moving through these seasons of life, and it goes by quick. Let me put it in perspective. Teach us to number our days. For the United States of America right now, if you were born in or around 1990, you can expect to live, 75 years and 2 months. As long as he's saying number our days, just to get that frame in mind, that's 27,467 days. Now, again, we're not going to be presumptuous. There's no guarantee you're going to live that long. But that would be the average. If you're just an average American, 1990 or thereabouts born, you can expect about 27,000 days. Now, think this one through. If you're 18 years old, and I doubt anybody here is younger than that. If you're 18 years, let's just say you had your birthday 6 months ago. You're in the middle of your 18-year-old year, and you're looking ahead to your 19th birthday. You've already spent 6,757 days. Now, put this in perspective here. That's 25% of your life is done. It's in the books. It's in the files. You've already lived it. You've already recorded it. It's gone. One quarter of your life. According to the national longevity of United States of American people born here, eating all the good, nutritious foods, all your vitamins, eating your juice plus, all your vegetables, you're done with a quarter of your life. Now, some of you, a lot of you here are older than that. Let's just say you're 21 years old. You've already spent 7,853 of your days. That's 29% of your life done. It's already lived. It's over. It's finished. If you're 26 years old, I don't know how you got in. We didn't card you. But 9,000, 679 days are spent. Guys, that's 35% of your life over. Now, here's the deal. That doesn't seem old for most people. You're here at church and someone comes up and 26, we hire somebody. Oh, he's only 26, he's young. That's not all that young. Think about that. 35% of your life is already spent. You can't go back. It's over. That's why the Bible has a lot to say about the perspective of our lives and keeping it in perspective. Psalm 39:4 says, O Lord, make me know my end and what is the measure of my days. So you are here in this room, anywhere between 25-33% of your life is already spent. That's a biblical thing for you to think through. And then the next line is this, let me know how fleeting I am. Behold, you have made my days a few handbreadths. Now, they didn't have rulers or tape measures back in biblical times. They had some rulers, but they were stored away in the important parts of the temple and the learning centers. But you, if you need to measure something, you do it with your hand. And just you'd use your longest finger and your thumb, and you'd mark out things that way. And he says, your life's just a few handbreadths. So what I want to do tonight is I want to think about your life in terms of handbreadths. And because there's a major turning point for most people at age 18, I want to think through our lives in a series of handbreadths here, okay? Birth to 9 years old, 9 to 18 years old, 18 to 27, 27 to 36, 45, 54, 63, 72. So you're in that period between, as we said, 25%. So what did we say? 35% of your life spent. You're right there in the, thus the title, the third nine years of your life. Okay, and I ended here at 72 because you know some few people make it to that that ninth nine, and if you do, you're probably not feeling up for a whole lot anyway. So let's just keep it at we got eight series of nines. Okay, And again, there's some things I won't substantiate here. Let's just call it Mike's wisdom, because I'm in, by the way, my sixth nine now. So I got a lot of years on you. So I'm going to summarize from my experience being a Bible student, a Bible teacher, and just a practitioner of life. I want to give you a few headings here, whether you get them down or not. I think it's all recorded. You can listen later, but just soak this in here. The first 9 years of your life, what were you doing? What was that all about? Well, not much. It was about your parents telling you what you couldn't do for the most part. Two things the Bible says parents do. They're supposed to, correct and direct. They're to discipline and train. Okay? And for the first 9 years, and I can say this as a parent of three, that most of the first part of a kid's life, all you're doing is telling them what they can't do. Don't eat that, don't do that, don't play with that, don't say that, don't stick that in your mouth. All of those kinds of things, it's a lot of no's. And they get to be around 9 years old. And then they start having a whole different kind of view on life. I mean, they're able to do stuff, and they're in soccer and Little League, and then you start being the coach, and you start helping out. And then in the second nine, you do a lot of training. You try to direct them. There's a lot less spanking and discipline and no going on. There's a lot more, you need to do this and you should do that and you need to go here. And there's a lot of character development that parents do. And if you got good parents, I think you could say that you look back and you see the earliest years, a lot of discipline. The latter years, and that's just two segments that they have you for, there's a lot of direction, a lot of prompting, a lot of encouragement. Do your homework, do this. You got to get a good college. You got to do that. That is where you've been. You're now in the third nine. Now, I'll come back to this as we go through our presentation, but I'm going to put it with these two words. From 18 to 27, you had better commence productivity. You as a person have to move from receiving discipline and training, correction and direction, to now, most of us leave home when we're 18 years old, or we should around that time. We get out, we start making our own decisions, and we have to become people that commence productivity in our lives. More on that later. As you get into your 36 to 45, we're assuming you've had some kids in your 18 to 27. Now, we'll talk about the exceptions to all of this. And you are finishing a period of disciplining your own kids. It's funny how fast you go from being disciplined and trained to now you're in a season of disciplining and training, and you're going to find that a lot of that starts to go away. And by the time you hit 36 years old, you're transitioning. Now you're becoming the little league coach and the soccer coach, and you're training your kids, and you're finishing that up. And by the time most people are 45, or at least how it has been in American culture in the past, we're pretty much done raising our kids. We've disciplined them. We've told them what they shouldn't do. We've formed their character. We've directed them. We've coached them. We've sent them on, and they're out and on their way. Now, there's a lot of abnormalities about our culture today, but this is a norm that we do see, and I think I can prove this both in the Bible and out of the Bible. It has been a pretty standard focus for people moving through seasons of life. Between 45 and 54, you find that people, after their kids are out of the house, they become empty nesters, and what you'll find, at least in a godly ideal, people then redouble their efforts in a focus on being productive in the church and in the marketplace, in the world. They start to now do things that they couldn't do because they're always dragging around kids with minivans. We sell our minivans. We start working on life in a whole new kind of way. We start to, while we were doing a dual duty of parenting and living and working, now we've got opportunity to throw ourselves into these things with a kind of proficiency that we couldn't have in the past. And believe it or not, I know it seems late in the game, and though I know we're a youth idolizing culture, the most productive years for people are usually 54 to 63. Now, I know all we do is watch athletes and actors and all of that, and that's young, but most people aren't actors and athletes. Most people are normal people who just go and work a job in their most productive years in terms of producing and producing material or making widgets or managing people. Their best years are 54 to 63. They find maximum productivity in their lives, in the marketplace, and in the church. And then from 63 to 72, most people are smart enough to realize, I'm beginning to get old, I'm not going to be here very long, and they turn their attention to a kind of mentoring that looks beyond their lives. They start investing in things that are going to last beyond where they live. They start to, what I call it, they finalize their legacy. And that's very wise, and there are some people that aren't wise because they're part of the youth idolizing culture, and they don't plan to pass off and turn over what they've produced, what they've built to the next generation. But that is, in essence, the eight nines of life. Now, a couple things. You live right here, unless you're a worker or somebody else. So if you're here, this is night is for people who are in the third nine. Here is a problem that we have, and there's a lot of problems I need to point out tonight. One of them is there is a growing segment of society that doesn't like the word productivity. They want to put off productivity as long as possible, so they don't even like the words commence productivity. They don't care for that. And I understand that because we've turned into a real, you know, entertainment kind of society, and kids grow up with a lot of doting parents handing you everything that, you know, makes you think the life is all about fun. But at some point, they recognize if the money dries up from mom and dad and I can't say I need $20 or $120, I need to produce for myself. You've got a good majority of right-thinking people that say I do need to commence productivity. But for them, here's what that means. That means I need to go to school, I need to get a good education so I can get a job that makes a lot of money so that I can buy a home that is nice and maybe as good as my parents or better. And they start seeing productivity in terms of education, job, income, and house. That is a problem. Here's why it's a problem. Because for the next two seasons of life, here's what we're doing. We are called to discipline our kids and train our kids to say no to our little ones and to direct our older ones, and that will be, for most people in life, that's going to be what they do. And when people forget in our day that that's what comes next in these nines of life, they define productivity simply in terms of education, income, job, and buying a good house. But think about that. All of the income, and you learn this when you become a parent, is really about sustaining your family. Your house that you buy is really about having a place to house your family. That is the normal sequence of life. And we need to, if we're going to think biblically and live even just rationally, we need to start looking at this season of life as preparing for those two next seasons of life, because that is where we're headed. That's the next thing. Now, I know there's been a lot of changes, and the number one change has been, let's not get into that real fast. Let's put that off. I don't want to have kids right away. I hear that not just, you know, out there in the marketplace. I hear that in the lobby of our church all the time, hallways of our offices. And people, well, I don't want to have kids right. That's the norm, I understand. And I'm here to say it's a foolish, ridiculous, and I even want to propose a sinful way for you to view your future. It doesn't work. It's not smart. It's a sin against special revelation, and I believe, as I'll show you tonight, it's a sin against natural revelation, and you know the difference. Special revelation is opening the pages of the Bible and seeing what God has revealed on paper. Natural law is what we see in the world, in nature, in our bodies, in our lives, and I think both of them will shout to you that putting those things off is foolish. Let's just look at the Bible for a second. Start with special revelation. Let me just run through these really quick, okay? And this is just a sampling of what you'll find in the Bible. Genesis 1:28, okay? And God blessed them. This is Adam and Eve. And God said to them, here's the first command here to them, be fruitful and multiply. And that's not talking about gardening, right? Although they were gardeners. It's talking about having children. Fill the earth, subdue it, and have dominion. How about this one, Genesis 9:1, coming out of the ark. And God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Genesis 35:11, God says to Jacob here, God said to him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. Jeremiah 29:6, 2 weeks ago, I quoted this from the platform if you were in our sermon. Take wives, have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons. Give your daughters in marriage that they may bear sons and daughters, multiply there, and do not decrease. Malachi 2:15. Did he not make them, context here is husband and wife, one. Did he not make husband and wife one? Two shall become one. With a portion of the Spirit in their union. People, for the most part, I know it's a lessening reality now, they call the pastor for a couple things, burying their dead relatives and getting married. That spiritual dimension, the Bible says, when you come to a minister, you get married, you have a sanctioning or a solemnizing of a marriage relationship, that God is involved in that. Now, what is God seeking in being involved in that? People that come to be married, look at this. And what was the one God seeking? Two words, godly offspring. So he says, guard yourselves in your spirit and let none of you be faithless to the wife of your youth. Don't leave her, don't divorce her, don't deny her children. You need to, as the Bible repeatedly says, be fruitful and multiply. Now, I just came for In-N-Out Burger. This is getting crazy here. Look at this last line. The wife of your middle age. Do you see that there? Wife of your what? Your youth. How many of you went to Resolved? I hear this was a topic at Resolved. You know what? I'm so grateful it was, because it saves me about 15 minutes in the middle of this message. But when you put off marriage, which is a growing average, today we've moved marriage out of late teens. It moved then in the 60s and 70s. To the early and mid and even now in the 80s, late and now into the 30s, late 20s and now into the 30s, we not only put off having children, we put off getting married. If you look this phrase up, you'll find it in the Bible, throughout the Bible. The expectation is the wife of your youth. The assumption is that you marry a girl that you met and you betrothed and you got married to, you got connected to in the sacred matrimony when you were a kid, when you were just a young person. Youth does not apply to me. Youth applies to you. And probably, even from a biblical perspective, your younger siblings. Let's put it this way. God could have picked anybody to raise Jesus Christ. Am I right? He picks Mary. I wish there was a verse that had her age in there, but there's no biblical scholar or even any historian of antiquity that would dispute the fact that she certainly was in her teens, probably her mid-teens, if not her her late teens, and no one's going to argue that Mary was in her 20s. Now, that's not a command for you to have a baby before you're 20, but it certainly is a biblical pattern and template for us that the expectation of the Bible is that we will get married and that we will get married young. We will get married early. And all of this, according to the Bible, is so that we can produce children. An argument from natural law. That's just an explanation from special revelation, but let's look at natural revelation. Now again, don't make any conclusions by this first point, but the sex drive commences, does it not, at age 12 or 13? And if you've, and you haven't, but I have, brought up some children through that interesting transition, when their face gets greasy and they sleep in late and they grow, you know, massively and exponentially, and all of a sudden now girls who had cooties are the sole focus of their attention. That transition takes place at 12 or 13 years of age. Girls start to menstruate at 12 or 13 on average. Obviously, there's a window for all of these things. Now, you need sex and you need to drop eggs to have children. God kicks that in not at 5, and he doesn't kick it in at 35. He kicks that in at 12 and 13. Now, I said draw no conclusions from this yet. We're not starting marital counseling classes in our junior high program. But we are saying that at least we know from natural law, God is preparing bodies to have children when they are in their, right, mid-teens. Let's just say that, right, from their 13, 16. I mean, they are capable biologically of having children. And let me say this. This may be the thing that you gals especially remember from this sermon for a long time. But let me make this clear and say it as loudly and firmly to you as I possibly can. Birth defects. I don't think anybody wants to have a kid with birth defects. I have one. My third child has birth defects. Some of you know people with Down syndrome children. Nobody shoots for that. That's not what we want, okay? As a mother ages, a woman ages, the expectation or risk of birth defects shoots up exponentially. Let me give you some research here. Let's just talk about Down syndrome, which, by the way, is just one chromosomal, very common chromosomal defect, you know, the tripling of a 27th chromosome. But there are several, trisomy 18, trisomy 13. There's all kinds of chromosomal birth defects, not to mention spinal birth defects like my, or neural tube birth defects like my child has. That's why she's paralyzed from the knees down. There's hydrocephalus, anencephaly. There's all kinds of things that happen, and we see a lot of it in our day. And one of the reasons it's going up, it's not because they're sneaking weird things into soda or Snicker bars. It's because the national average of women is that they have children much later in life. Let me give you some stats here. If you're 25 years old, can you read that? Man, you're a long way from those numbers, but you have great eyes because you're young. Can you see those numbers? Kind of? You're not very responsive. Can you see those numbers?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. If you're 25 years old, gals, and have a baby, which most people today would, it sounds like you're 8. I know in our day, but that's on the late end from a historic perspective. That's on a late end for having kids. If you're 25 years old, you have a 1 in 1,250 chance of having a Down syndrome baby. And what that means is you're probably not going to have one. Okay? If you are 30 years old and you have a child, I'm just talking about you're healthy, your husband's healthy, you have a child, you now have a 1 in 1,000 chance that you'll have a Down syndrome baby. If you're 35 years old, which by the way is the growing number that people today in our generation shoot for, let me say this, 1 in 5 women in our country, and the stats go up every year, are having children after age 35, okay? 35 years old, you have now gone from a 1,250 chance to a 1 in 400 chance that your kid is going to have just this one chromosomal defect, and that is Down syndrome in this case. If you're 40, which is all cool now, I just want to have my kids before 40. Great. If you're getting near 40, you have your kid, which usually is your first kid. You'll have a second or maybe a third. You've got a 1 in 100 chance that your kid will have Down syndrome, and that's just one chromosomal defect. If you're 45, which is the way, of course, Hollywood likes to do it, you have a 1 in 30 chance. And if you happen to be 49 and still able to drop a healthy egg and even conceive, you have a 1 in 10 chance of having a child with a birth defect, in this case, Down syndrome. Look at that. I don't have to open the Bible to show you something that God is trying to say to us, right? It's kind of like the talks you had in high school, I hope, about STDs. Did you have those when we were telling you not to have sex? Now I'm telling you to have sex. I know it's really weird at church, but we told you don't have sex. Why? Because you're going to get an STD. Because if we did the chart, maybe Bobby's done that for you guys, and depending on the partners, which, by the way, when you have sex out of marriage, and the average person, even they did a study in Europe where they looked at if you had, I don't have all the precise numbers. Allow me to summarize. If you have an average of 11 sexual partners in your life, you've really exchanged bodily fluids, right, with over, I don't know what it was. It was like 20,000 people, right? Because those stats add up. So we're always saying natural law itself speaks against that, along with homosexuality. Romans chapter 1 says that, right? You will bear the penalty in your own body. Things like homosexuality breed kinds of diseases that we don't see outside of that lifestyle. Even the AIDS epidemic reminded us of that, and there were some ancient diseases as well. But my point is, natural law will say things like homosexuality, not a good idea. It'll say promiscuous life, not a good idea. And you know what this says? Having children late in life, not a good idea. That's what God is shouting to us from a simple statistical, and this is from the Center for Disease Control. No, scratch that. This is from the March of Dimes research. It's a simple statistical way to say, wow, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. And again, remember, I put the star here at 35. That is what most people in your seat right now are shooting for, because they say, I want to have a career, and I want to get my education, and maybe I'll get my master's degree. I want to make sure I have a good home, because I don't want to raise my kid in the right house. If you shoot for that, you're now starting, and I'm saying that's when they're shooting for their first child, and now 1 in 5 women have their first kid at age 35. That's what you have to look forward to. Exponentially increasing opportunity or chance or risk of having a child with a birth defect. How about this? Risk of miscarriage. No one likes miscarriage. I've been a pastor for many years now. No one's happy when they have a miscarriage. It's like, oh, it's great. It's a devastating thing. Between 35 and 39 years old, you have a 20% chance of having a miscarriage. Between 40 and 44, 35, and over 45, you have over a 50% chance of having a miscarriage. Again, natural law screams at you, do not wait to have your kids. Here's some more of fun stuff you get if you want to wait until you're 35, which most of people in your place, in the secular counterparts, I hope not in the church, but I know it's true in the church, here's some more fun things that you get. Infertility. Which I struggled with in our marriage. My wife had endometriosis, which got worse the older she got. And by the time we were saying, okay, we got our ducks in a row, we're going to have kids now, God said, no, you're not. Because the older you are and the longer you wait to have children, your increase of infertility goes up to where you have 1/3 of all couples who want to have kids at 35 or older, which is where most people are planning to have their kids for the first time, who are now in the third nine of their life. You can plan on. It's just take a three-sided coin, there's a fun thought, and flip it. You've got 1 in 3 chance of having infertility problems. And I know maybe you're not into all this, but you will be when you get older and you're thinking about kids. You'll read about gestational diabetes. Terrible, frustrating, maddening. A lot of work goes into that. You're twice as likely to have that if you have your kid over 35. High blood pressure for your child, which is a problem right out of the gate. Noted increase, and it's different depending on the actual age, but I've got all the research for you if you want to see it. Placental problems, and there's all kinds of problems with placenta that causes all kinds of issues, and there's a variety of diseases related to that. You're twice as likely to have that if you want to wait till you're 35 to have your kids. And I'm not even talking about your first kid. You may say, well, I'm going to start earlier. Great. If you have your third kid by the time you're 35, like I did, which again, I hope you're getting the sense, don't do as I do as I say. If I could go back and change this, did I not start it that way? I wish someone would have said this to me, because I grew up as a younger version of you, hearing all this stuff about get all your ducks in a row, make sure you have enough money, get your education. And when I got married a little younger than most, I said, well, we can't have kids right away. I did the wrong thing here. I'll just admit that right up front. And we struggled with infertility. We struggled with spina bifida, neural tube defects, hydrocephalus, all kinds of issues. Premature birth, a significant increase depending on the age. Stillbirth, which is devastating. Deal with that in the ministry from time to time. You are twice to three times more likely to have a stillbirth if you have a child after the age of 35. Okay, I know a lot of people here, not a lot, maybe some, not going to have you raise your hands, but they'll say, I don't want to have kids anyway. I don't have kids. I just, you know, meet the right person, fall in love, that's all. And I just want to have a good time, my life partner. Okay, this is just no stats on this, it's just a testimonial. Are you ready? I just thought I'd write it out. I've been in the people business for over 26 years, working full-time, pulling a paycheck to meet with you. Let's put it this way, in my database, I have anywhere from 8,000, depending on if it's my phone or my computer, to 12,000 people currently, and I've had that kind of thing going on. I mean, that's a lot of names in a Rolodex, people I know, people I deal with. I know a lot of people, and a lot of people know me. In the 26 years I've been doing this, I have yet to meet a young couple who says they don't want children who haven't changed their mind. I couldn't think of one. I cannot go back in my... I can think of several young couples that got married that said they didn't want to have kids. And I said, oh, they won't have kids. Every single one of them in my entire pastoral ministry has at some point in their life, and usually it's when they reach 35, 36, 37 years old, they change their mind. And I can tell you tragically, a lot of them try to have kids at that point and they can't. If you know that if that is your thought... Okay? And I know everybody thinks they're the exception. And you probably won't be the exception. I'm just saying you might as well change your mind now. Because you are risking your child's health and maybe even the health of your wife or your own health, girls, if you wait. Because you start your young life thinking, oh, I don't want to have kids. Yet to meet a couple, young couple, that have said that haven't gone back on that decision. And that's quite a few. My testimony to you. Well, maybe we'll have one. That's the problem. People are having just one. Let's look at this. Our birth rate in the United States of America has dropped for 12 consecutive years to the lowest level in recorded American history. We have no stats at all, ever, since the founding of our country, where our birth rate has been lower than it is right now. And by that I mean, how many in the general population will the average woman, how many kids will she have? It has dropped to the lowest level in American history. That's where we're at right now. Starting in 2007, with a lot of cool young people in the third nine of their life, the fertility rates have fallen at the fastest rate they have ever fallen since some war periods in our history, at least in the last 30 years, plummeting. So it's kind of speeding up as the fertility rate in our country continues to decline. Just to give us some perspective, because of death and all the rest, you need 2.1 live births per female to simply sustain a country's population. In other words, if you don't have 2.1 kids per female in a society, you are going to see this population of that society decline. Okay? So let's get some stats. The United States. Guess what? I know that's small print. Our birth rate right now in the United States of America is 2.1, which again, that means we won't get any larger and we won't get any smaller. That's what you need to maintain your population, 2.1. Let me give you some more countries, many in the G8. I mean, these are the industrialized, developed nations. How about France? France has 1.9. Australia, 1.7. The UK, the United Kingdom, 1.6. Canada, 1.5. Germany, 1.4. Japan, 1.3. Italy, 1.2. Spain, 1.1. Now think about that. 1.1 means that you are decreasing your population by half every single generation. Every generation. What does that mean for Spain right now? That means Spaniards going to be, you know, a word. Who are the, I don't know, like the Celtics. I don't remember the Spaniards. It's not going to take long for that to go away. They're going to be gone. We, by the way, the United States of America, are at the top of the industrialized nation list. That's scary. Oh, is it? I don't know. Oh, I didn't put 1.1. Sorry, there it is. Spain 1.1. I guess if you're Al Gore, you're happy about it, right? Because, you know, get all the people off the planet and we won't, you know, kill trees and bunnies and dolphins and it'll be great. But again, if you have special revelation nagging you over your shoulder, what does the Bible tell us to do? It tells us to be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over it. Don't believe the garbage from Al Gore and his cronies. Just fly sometime, if you got nothing else to do on a particular Saturday, get on a plane and fly from L.A. to New York and get a window seat and look out the window. There's a lot of space in this planet. There's a lot of space on this earth. There is a myth, and I don't have time to get into it all, that this whole fear of overpopulation that they taught you, you know, in high school and in college classes, it's a myth. And give me a shot at that another night, and I'll unravel that. Hey, is it that bad all over the world? No, it's not. It's really not. As a matter of fact, let me give you some very robust places on the planet. Yemen. Their birth rate is 6.6. Oh, Afghanistan, that's been in the news, 6.7. Somalia, 6.8. Mali, 7.4. Niger, 7.5. Are you catching what I'm doing here? Let me give you some more numbers, just for fun. 99, 99, 99, 88, 97. Do you know what those numbers represent? The percentage of the population who are adherents to Islam. Okay? The country in Europe that has, and Europe is a terrible birth rate. The country in Europe with the highest birth rate in Europe, okay, Albania, has the highest Muslim population. Guess who's outbreeding us, right? I mean, 3-1. In some cases, 4-1. Oh, wow. Well, okay. That's why we need more Muslim awareness seminars. Well, they have an agenda, by the way. They want to dominate the world. I don't know if you've checked that out, but they've got a plan. And they're working on it, which, by the way, includes a lot of hatred for guess who? The United States. I just grabbed these pictures in one. I probably took me, 15 minutes just to go and grab some of these photos. There's three things they really hate. They hate the UK, they hate the United States, and they hate Israel, which God seems to be kind of keen on those guys, has a plan for them. They're all about hatred. As a matter of fact, in any Muslim country, you know, when we're used to seeing Barney talk about good playground etiquette and stuff like that, the children's shows in Muslim nations are all about making sure that no kid graduates preschool without recognizing that the only good Jew is a dead Jew. You'll see them with their chants and nursery rhymes. I wish I had time for this. This is a whole other message. But, I mean, they routinely teach children to call Jews and Americans, us infidels, dogs and rats. I know we like dogs in our culture, but they don't. I mean, that's a rat. A dog is only a big rat to them. I know. Petco is crying over that one. But they hate us, and they hate Israel. I just found another picture here. Islam will dominate the world. This is in London, by the way, who has a growing, aggressively, exponentially growing population of Muslims. This here is in Indonesia, which is another huge breeding ground, both figuratively and biologically, for Islam. I picked this one up from the women's ministry, the local Islamic chapter here in London. Your dead are in our dead are in paradise, yours are in hellfire. This picture was from when we killed bin Laden. They had a big rally here for him. So the largest fertility rates in the world are all Muslim countries with an underlying agenda. What are you saying, Pastor Mike? Are you saying I got to have kids? Not necessarily. Not that it's not a good idea to have several of them. But I am saying this. I'm saying it'd be good for you to have kids for the right reason. Okay, it'd be good for you to have kids for the right reason. And maybe let me even invert that, which I probably should have put it this way. You need to not have kids for the wrong reason. Did you catch that? A lot of people don't want to have children because, unfortunately for them, life is about having fun, not responsibility. So they don't want to have kids because kids sure look like a lot of trouble, and I know I seem like a lot of trouble to my parents, and I'm not sure I want that, and it's not gonna fit well into my fun plan and my third nine of life. So I don't want to get right into that. Let me say this: in the United States, the people that are having kids the most, they are, I guess, if you started, it would be the Muslims, and then it would be the Latinos, and then the African Americans. But if you look at Anglo-Saxon white folks, well, not necessarily the typical Anglo-Saxon, but if you look at folks, European descent folks that are having lots of kids, Mormons and Catholics, am I right? Mormons and Catholics. When you meet somebody at the PTA meeting who has eight kids, you go, oh, Mormon or Catholic? Because you're wondering, what you got to be one or the other. I mean, you're not Baptist with eight kids, so unless you're the Duggards, maybe. But most of you are either Mormon or Catholic. I mean, the first time I saw the Duggards on channel surfing, I thought, there's a Mormon family, and I was shocked to hear that they weren't. They're weird, nevertheless. But why do Mormons have children? Mormons want to have as many children as possible because they want to take these spirit beings and have them embodied in Mormon families. So their theological reason for lots of kids is that when they do that, they get to save one of these bodiless spirits, and their damnable doctrine, the Mormon doctrine, teaches that they get to implant these spirits in these bodies. Now, Catholics have lots of kids. Why? Why do they have lots of kids? Because they don't believe in contraception. You can say the word. This is just isn't interactive. I forgot. I tried to loosen you up at the beginning. They don't believe in contraception. Let me say this. I don't believe having children is going to bring, you know, spirit babies into saving homes. And I don't believe that having lots of children is because we don't believe in contraception. Let me just make this quick argument. From contraception and kingdom singles, the Catholics, and I've debated choice Catholics on this topic because I don't believe that contraception is sinful. But I do think it's wrong not to have kids for the wrong reasons. Jesus was a kingdom single, and there are some kingdom singles. They're very few, but the kingdom singles that are out there, they have equipment they don't use, let's put it that way, for the intended purpose. The Catholic argument is this, that if God intended married couples to not have babies, then he wouldn't have given that opportunity when couples come together and have sex. If kids are the product of that, then to get something in the way of that is sinful. And my response to the Catholic priest that I've spent time dealing with on this is, listen, Jesus himself short-circuited the plan for his male, you know, body parts because he didn't reproduce with those. And Paul himself, and they celebrate the very small minority of people who are kingdom singles, and they don't do what they could do because, not, and they don't say, well, because I can, I should. And just because marital sex can produce children doesn't mean that they should. And there are reasons. But those reasons have to be better than the biblical reasons that God calls us to have children. Okay? In my case, for instance, I wished I would have started much earlier because I bought part of the Christian evangelical lie of putting all of this off and getting all my ducks in a row. And if I hadn't, I would have a lot more kids. By the time I got to my third kid, my wife was quite a bit older than she should have been having children. And our third one, we ended up with a neural tube defect and a child with a genetic disorder. That, unfortunately, put us in a place where if we have more, we're setting our kids up for that kind of life. So, you know, to say that is a greater good than having children, I don't think there's any biblical argument against contraception. So let me say this. There may be a reason for you not to get married at all, called being a kingdom single. And if that's the case, and if you're gifted with that, great, have at it. And you may get married, and for some strange reason, you may have a greater reason not to have kids, and it may be that you are in some way predisposed to some genetic abnormality, or it may be that you're in some really weird mission field on Mars, and if you know, kids can't live on Mars, only adults in the right spacesuits, so we great, then don't have kids. I mean, I don't know what the reason would be, but there may be a reason, and then use all the contraception in your marriage as you want, and that's fine. That probably wasn't we're saying. What's the right reason? The right reason is this: to produce godly offspring. God wants us to fill the earth, multiply, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, have dominion over it. And what he wants having dominion over it is not people with a theology of hatred that wants to kill the infidels, right? He wants to fill the planet with people that believe and know the truth. And the best place to produce those folks is in Christian homes. People that know and believe the truth, raising kids in an environment that can know and believe the truth. So I want you to before you say, are you saying I'm not saying you have to have kids. There are some rare exceptions, but I'm just saying don't say no to kids for the wrong reasons. You need to see the biblical reason. Okay, as a matter of fact, let me just put it in biblical terms. What am I saying? Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying what Ephesians 5 is saying with all that we've talked about. Look carefully then how you walk. That means how you live. It has nothing to do with your gait or how you sway when you walk from point A to point B. How you live your life. Not as unwise, but as wise. Making the best use of the time. That's important. I mean, even if I just talk about natural law and birth defects or whatever it might be, child, you know, wife of your youth, make the best use of the time. You're in the third nine. Make the best use of that because the days are evil. And if I didn't paint that picture for you, then you were sleeping through that part. It is a tough world that we're living in. And people that are living and standing up for the truth and living their lives for the purpose of advancing the truth, it's the diminishing number. All of those nations had a Christian heritage at some point in their past, and now they're not even having kids. We're losing this by default in terms of trying to influence the world for Christ. Therefore, don't be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Now, again, have me back some other time, and I'll go through some other things, but let me leave you with some five practical steps for the third nine. Okay, based on what we've talked about, just leave you with this. Okay, now this may sound like a downer. It's really not, but you need to move from fun as your goal to living strategically. A real conscious move from fun to strategic. Because when we're kids, we want to have fun by, you know, sticking our finger in the outlet and mom says no. And then the second nine, we want to have fun by staying out until 3 and mom says no. Instead, you need to do this. And we're getting corrected and directed by our parents. And then we get out of that. And now we're 18. We're living that great period of life. And we think now it's about having all the fun I couldn't have when I was being dominated by my parents. You need to move from fun to strategic because we're in a period when it's all about thinking about commencing productivity. And here's just a general principle on this. 1 Thessalonians 5:6-8, we need to not sleep. There's those people that don't think about their life. They just live their lives, not as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. I know this is all an analogy, but try and follow this here. For those who sleep, and they sleep at night, and then those who get drunk, they get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober. We need to think. We need to think strategically. You're in a period of life right now to commence with your productivity. And the productivity in the next two seasons are to discipline kids and to train kids. Your most productive years of life. I know in our youth idolizing culture, we think it's when we're 18 to 26 years old. It's not. Your most productive periods, my most productive years, are in the next nine of my life. I'm just at the place now of shifting attention from raising little kids, and I had mine later than I should have, to increasing my focus on what I do, and then that next nine I trust to reach an apex of productivity if God gives me life through that. And I have no illusions that, and you shouldn't either, that it's all about being maximally productive in terms of your marketplace or the church in the early years of your life. It is about you preparing to get married, to raise a family, and to discipline and train your children. Secondly, I think you need to, if you're going to do this, you need to lose your idyllic expectations. Lose your idyllic expectations. When we're children, we think if I can just get out of all the rules and kind of get out on my own, it'll be great. And then we think, oh yeah, I want to fall in love and all that, but you know, I don't know, nobody's quite right. I just thought of this verse when I was putting together this presentation here today. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment. There it is again. To think soberly and maturely is not to think of myself, you know, higher than I should. And I think, unfortunately, when it comes to putting things off, thinking that I got to live this great period of time, there hadn't been a person I know that has put these things off that looks back and says, man, you know what, I'm so glad I put all that off. I just don't hear that as a general expectation. And I find, too, or general opinion, and I find, too, that people that are saying no to this and no to that are usually thinking there's got to be something better. And all I'm telling you is the best thing is getting in to the next nine of your life, you know, having laid the foundation and the framework and prepared, which for you is to get married and to have some kids. I mean, that is the next nine. You got to get there through this period with that. And I know with marriage, for instance, I'm still looking for the perfect person. If you find the perfect person, please don't marry the perfect person, because you're going to mess up the perfect person's life because you're not perfect. I know we like to dream that we're great, but you know, you're going to find a sinner to marry, which will be perfect because you're a sinner. And the two sinners, you can go on and pursue holiness in your imperfection, because there's nobody who's found the perfect mate. So stop trying to find the perfect mate, because if you found him, you as a sinner would terribly mess up their life. So lose your idyllic expectations. There's a lot of directions we could go with that, but very practical counsel for the third nine is to stop. Wait, you know, Prince Charming is not going to ride in on a white horse. I guarantee it. There are very few white horses in Orange County. You're going to have to marry a guy with problems. I mean, try to make it a minimal amount of problems and not egregious problems. But let me put it this way. I should be careful here, but let me put it this way. Don't tell your parents any of this stuff we talked about. I guarantee you, I guarantee you, I swear to you before Almighty God, okay? I could pick any two people in this room, providing that one is a man and one is a woman. And let me add another qualifier. And you were both really committed to Christ, okay? Albeit imperfectly, because all of our commitments to Christ are imperfect. I could bring you up here right now. I could marry you. Right? I could have you solemnize a covenant. I could just pick two of you right now. We could do it if you want to. I could just bring you up, put you right here, and I could say, do you, and yes, and do you, and yes, and I now pronounce you husband and wife. You may kiss the bride, and you wouldn't even know each other. I guarantee you, if you both are committed to Christ, then this book is your guideline, and you will go into your marriage, and you will make adjustments, just like anybody who's known the other person for years, and you could live a godly, productive life for Christ. And if you live to the end of the average lifespan, you could experience your 50th wedding anniversary. I guarantee it. Because it is not about this. That's why arranged marriages. Have you noticed their divorce rate is lower than ours? What's with that? I mean, really what we're saying with that is that just the blind random odds, if you will, to speak humanly here for a moment, is just as effective. And I think it's more effective. Why? Not that I'm advocating that, arranged marriages, but I'm saying it's more effective when the couple recognizes this is about right? Marriage, loving one another, raising children, having a family, being life partners. I could pair any of you up. I could take two 18-year-olds right now, and we could marry them up, and we could celebrate. I won't live that long, but you could celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary, and they could look back, and guess what their road would be? Rocky, just like every marriage is, ups and downs. All right, that didn't go over very well, but... But if I can tell you to lose your idyllic expectations, I would love for you to do that. And let's get on with life. Let's maximize the third nine. You need to pursue marriage. A couple verses together that may be humorous and helpful. He who finds a wife finds a good thing. Proverbs 18:22 obtains favor from the Lord. Finds, which Proverbs says a lot about. You know, anything you're going to find, it's not about you, it's serendipity. It's about you seeking out what it is. Well, if you put this in juxtaposition to the sluggard, which is another picture of a guy who wants something. He wants lunch or dinner here, but he's a sluggard. He's lazy. He buries his hand in the dish, but he won't even bring it back to his mouth. He's not a lazy person is so lazy. He's found what he wants, but he's not even capable and wanting. He's so lazy. He won't even bring it to his mouth. Okay? All I'm telling you is to seek and find a spouse is going to take diligence. You can't, the food is not going to fly into your face. And the man is not going to drop into your life. And the girl isn't going to slide into your, you know, into your living room and say, I'm here, I'm your wife. You have to find these people. Go find them. We're moving now from serendipitous fun, right, to thoughtful, strategic, sober living, because you're in the third nine of life. You got to get ready for the fourth nine when you're finishing the discipline of your kids, and then into the next where you're finishing their training. So don't be a sluggard. I guess that's the way to put it. Don't be lazy. It would be like, and I often analogize it this way. If I said to you, let's talk to you guys. If I said, guys, is it God's will for you to have a job? Oh, well, of course, the Bible says that. And I said, great, what are you doing about it? And you say, well, I'm just waiting for the right job to find me. Right? Really? That's not smart. And immediately you'd say, well, I would never do that. I'm out looking. I'm putting in resumes and I'm filling out applications. If it's God's will for you to be married, and all you got to do is check your own life to find that out, it's not hard. I mean, it's not hard at all. If you have any inkling for the opposite sex, you are not gifted to be a kingdom single, and you need to go hunt for your spouse. Hunt may not be the right verb. Seek, does that sound more godly? Seek and you will find. Don't be a sluggard, because there's plenty of folks that you can and could marry, but you gotta bring your hand back to your mouth and ask them out. But I'm afraid of rejection. Oh, by the way, can I turn the CD off for just a second? Because I know this comes up. Well, I got to wait for the guy to ask me out. Gals, guys, don't listen to me right now. Gals, can I tell you what men, guys' number one fear is? That you will reject us. That's our number one fear. It's our number one fear. So we will not ask you out. Guarantee you. If you, right, give us any, if there's any fuzzy, misty, foggy possibility that you might reject us. See? So you have a lot more power than you think you have. Because if you give me, not me, I'm married, but... If you were to give them any confidence that if they were, see, that they wouldn't be rejected, that makes the wimpiest guys courageous. But that takes a little work on your part. And then, guys, it takes some work on your part to get this thing going. All right, plan to establish a family. I have to say that with declining fertility rates, with the increase of genetic problems, with my own experience, which is typical of starting kids far too late, you got to get at it. Just one verse. It's just such one of my favorite texts in the Bible. Children are a heritage from the Lord. There's something that you have that is your descendants, your progeny, the thing that goes on. The fruit of the womb are a reward from God. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. There's the analogy. There are lots of arrows in the quiver. Or as the elsewhere in the Psalms, it says that they're like young plants growing up around the table. You know, it's a great picture. And God says, you're blessed if you have. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full, who fills his quiver with him. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Now, maybe if you're watching some crime show or something, someone will say, I wish I never had that kid. But in the people business, knowing thousands of people throughout the years, I have not met a person who looks back and says, I wish I wouldn't have had four kids. I wish I would have had two. Never, never have that. And I can tell you, as one who's done with my bringing kids into this world, I wished I would have had dozens more. Maybe not dozens, but I wished my quiver was full of them. I wished I had more. Lastly, you need to understand your marital roles. This doesn't work if you have confused marital roles. And if I haven't offended you ladies already, let me just tell you, this is largely your fault, your problem. It is, because you have been sold a bill of goods. I should blame the people that have taught this to you, but you do not understand if you bought into the standard cultural line that it's secondary to raise children. It is the thing, according to the Bible, that will most gratify your life. And even if, like Pastor Pete, there's some reason, and I didn't ask permission for to bring this up, but he's not ashamed of the fact that he has adopted his children, and there's plenty of kids and couples that adopt for medical reasons. And I'm telling you, it doesn't matter if they come from your body or if you raise them through adoption, it is the fulfillment of life. To think that a briefcase and an office in Irvine is somehow more gratifying or more fulfilling than you raising your husband's children, then you have bought the absolutely psychotic philosophy of this world, and you need to give it up and recognize that you can believe what the culture says and continue down the path of the chaos and lunacy of our culture, or you can get back to God's word, which says there's nothing better. Oh, I want to get my career going first. Listen, your most productive years won't be until you're in your 50s anyway. And by the way, then you'll have the experience of raising those kids. Think about it. I mean, let's just say you have three. At least you're, you know, above the sustaining average for fertility rates in our country. And most people, you know, they're not thinking of another two in diapers. So they stretch out their kids, let's say, 9 years, right? You are going to have all of these years. 9 years plus 18, what's that? How many years is that? Oh, man, is it that hard? 27 years? Is that 27? I'm terrible at math, I'll admit it, of experience raising kids. Now you want to talk about an education you're going to have, and no master's degree can rival that when you now want to go into the marketplace or into the church and make a difference for Christ. It is the best education and preparation for your maximal productivity, which comes after you raise those children. And guys, you want to wait? I'll wait. I'll just make sure I get a young wife, and that way she can... Okay. Good luck with that, by the way. And then let me say this. If you don't start till the average person starts, which is 35, that's the goal for most young people in the third nine of their life, and you want two in diapers, so you space them out, that's 9 years of your life. 27, 35, that's what is that, 62? I told you I'm bad at math, but some of you are math majors. You'll be 62 years old, and I'm not there yet, believe it or not. I'm what, 46? And I'm already feeling like I'm 86, and I can't imagine going to my son's high school graduation at 62, okay? You want to see any grandkids? What are we waiting for? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, I don't have time to go through all these passages, but I just threw down a number of texts that would help you look at what God says. And you can, by the way, and I don't know, I should probably have new people here that think this is all a crock. Great. Good luck with that perspective. God is going to judge the world based on what he told us, not on what MTV says or the best-selling books say. These are the things that will judge your life, the Word of God. So you want to know how you should live your life? Well, the one thing, you got to figure out your marital roles. Guys, you need to know what your role is. Gals, you need to know what your role is. You need to fulfill that role. And to learn that in the third nine of life is critical. Because you're going to be choosing your spouse. I trust you'll be working on raising and starting a family and getting into the key things in life. So anyway, the third nine is critical. You're in it. I hope it's a season of transition for you. You better make those goals and work to achieve them. And they don't have to do with all the worldly definitions of productivity. They have to do with God's definitions, which are much, much different. All right. Let me pray for you. Because after that, we need it. Let's pray. God, opportunity for me tonight to, from various principles of your word, try to relay, I trust this was understood, a concerned heart of Christian wisdom for our young people in the third nine of their lives. There's so much propaganda from Satan that it just pervades our culture. And God, I wish someone would have loved me enough to say these kinds of things to me when I was 18, 19, 20 years old. So I pray that they would receive these things from me as from my heart that's genuine and sincere, that I love these folks. I love the potential that is here not to fulfill these definitions and these categories that the world holds up, but to really fulfill the templates of your word, which are much different than what the world expects from us. And I pray they'd find great joy in that. I know one day that's all it's going to matter. We're going to stand before you and our lives will be evaluated based on what you told us. We can't ignore it because it wasn't cool. We're going to wish we would have been good students of your word and lived according to it. So God, may this crowd be able to just hear, even if it's between the lines, the love that I have and that you ultimately have for them about making the most of this third nine, which is not about just having fun, but it's about being productive. It's about being responsible. It's about getting things started, getting into the fourth nine with intentionality. And God, I know part of this is just a reflection of a lot of bad theology. We've gone wrong, and I've imbibed in it as well as in my younger days that somehow you weren't a king, you were a commodity. You were a commodity to serve us, not a king that we were called to serve. And so I thought you'd bring on a platter the things I wanted, when in reality you wanted me to find ultimate joy in giving my life for you, serving you by looking to your word and asking, what does the Bible expect of me? And it wasn't trying to, back in our day, we called it double income, no kids. That was the cool thing to have. And God, what a joke, what an absolute mirage that was, to think that's what it was all about. So God, may many, even if it's just some here, hear your voice in this brief presentation, this one night, they might rethink some of the goals for this season of their life. May they be able to see through the lies that the enemy constantly pours out on every era, the media, the music of our day, the culture, the television, the movies, everything. May we be able to discern that. May we recognize the days are evil, and that we need to make the best use of the time. And God, there's a lot of potential in this room to turn things around. Folks that are just entering the third nine of their lives, may it be the best period ever. So far, I know it won't be the most productive And like the rest of life, it'll be filled with imperfection and sin and problems. But God, may they at least be strategically and zealously pursuing the path that is appropriate to folks, finding the wife of their youth, starting those families, connecting in the rich Christian tradition of being fruitful and multiplying, creating godly offspring. God, I ask that you would bless them in this. For those that are getting it, maybe some that are willing to hear your voice in all of this, may you bring a sense, even tonight as they reflect or later in the evening as they discuss, may they find a confirmation from your Spirit just that this is right. May it sit so rightly with their heart if they're converted. And God, for those that don't, if church is a culture to them or a club, may there even be some here that recognize that this group, this church, this pastor, we're not about part-time Christianity. We want to live our lives fully for you. And may they be prompted by your Spirit through repentance and faith to put their trust in your Son. And God, thanks for those that are committed followers of Christ. Give them clarity about your mission for them and your goals for this season of their lives for your glory. Thanks so much for all the great new changes that take place in the third nine of life. Make it a great one for them in Jesus' name.